Nadine Sierra is an operatic soprano who at the age of 21 became the youngest winner of the Metropolitan Opera Council auditions. She's 30 years old now, and she's finding her place in the world. That's kind of the idea behind her debut recording, There's a Place for Us. She tells you more in this edition of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Macher. Nadine, would you please tell me what attracted you to the world of opera? Because this is something that you've had a passion for a very long time.
I was 10 years old when I got interested in opera, and this was through my mother, who is from Lisbon, from Portugal, and she introduced opera to me through a VHS tape that the Metropolitan Opera had given out at that time, which was the Zeffirelli production of La Boheme with Teresa Stradas and Jose Carreras. And she brought it to me from our public library in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, which we never returned because I was obsessed with this VHS tape and wanted to hold on to it for dear life. And I watched it all the time and just knew I had to do that. I had to become an opera singer. I had started, I would say, training in voice when I was 6 years old, because my mother introduced the idea of me having a voice lesson every week as long as I practiced every day for an hour every day, and I agreed to that. And I just knew that pop music, even musical theater, it wasn't speaking to me in a way that opera did. Opera just grabbed me. It almost like stole me away from reality, and I just had to be part of it. So I did tell my mother at that time, this is what I want to do. I know this with 100% certainty. And she said, well, you're going to have to work even harder than you are now, even though you're so young, to be an opera singer. And I agreed. I went to all of these kinds of programs. I worked with two opera teachers and, yeah, just developed from there and truly never, ever looked back.
We were 21 years old when you became the youngest winner of the Metropolitan Opera Council auditions. What did that mean for you? Because this is an opportunity that often launches careers, and yet being so young, did you feel any extra pressure?
Honestly, I didn't, and I'll tell you why. Before I had entered into the competition, I had dinner with Marilyn Horne. I was asking her about competitions because, honestly, I was in school, I was studying in New York, and my parents really didn't have the financial means to keep supporting me, you know, living in the city. And I knew the only way I could do it myself was to enter into competitions so I could have scholarships for schooling. And I asked her about the Metropolitan Opera competition and asked her if she thought I was too young to apply, because that was my major concern. And she said to me, Nadine, who cares what age you are? Just go into every competition honestly with no expectations. Because if you don't have any expectations, should you lose or not get to the next round, you won't be disappointed. And it will be a good learning experience for you, a kind of a chance to perform. And I thought about that and I thought, wow, she's so right. What do I have to lose? I don't have anything. Just sing and see what happens. And that's honestly how I got through the four rounds for the Met competition without any stress or anxieties of what would happen, because I honestly didn't expect anything to come out of it. So when I did win, I was very happy, of course, but I think I was a little bit surprised. I was surprised that the judges had so much faith in me and wanted to support me in the way that I I don't know, that I kind of needed to be supported, especially at that age. So it was a great blessing for me, I'd say.
You then, a few years later, made a conscious decision to have a Metropolitan Opera debut.
Yes.
Rather than just being a cover or having a smaller role. How did you go about that?
The Met had offered me at some point some covering options, and I always said no because I thought to myself, if I'm going to throw myself into a debut at the Met or a situation of working with the Met, it has to be in a role that I'm very secure in, something that's very familiar to me, and I have to do it in a big way for myself, just to prove to myself that I can do it and I've worked hard enough to be able to do something like that. And I waited. I was very patient. I said no to a few of their offers. And finally, this did come about of singing Gilda in their Las Vegas production of Rigoletto. So when it finally came, I was so happy because at that point, I think I had sung Gilda maybe 3 or 4 times already. So it was a role that I felt very, very prepared to do. The conductor was Roberto Abbado, whom I had worked with before. And some of my colleagues in the opera were also people I had been introduced to before, even though I was so young. So it almost felt like I was just singing with friends on the Met stage. But at least I had the community around me to make me feel like it wasn't such a big debut, but more of just another performance that I was looking forward to doing.
You are of the belief that this music belongs to everybody. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Well, when I think about my past, you know, this 10-year-old little girl in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where, let's be honest, there are only 2 opera houses in South Florida, which are Palm Beach Opera and Florida Grand Opera in Miami, Florida. So there isn't really a lot of exposure to opera in general in that area, at least not, you know, where you would find in New York or let's say in places in Germany or France or in Italy. And I was just introduced to it through a VHS, something so simple as just a videotape from my library. And that one little event that happened to me, thank God my mother introduced it to me, it transformed my life. It transformed everything that I did up until now. And if that could have done that to me in the living situation that I had at that time, yeah, I believe that anyone who can be introduced to opera or even classical music in a very simple way can fall in love with it the way I did. I really, really deeply believe that that's possible. And I do believe that no matter where you come from, your heritage, your financial situation, educational situation, whatever it may be, that anyone can fall in love with opera. You just have to have that first introduction to it. That's it.
I know that you're also very aware that you need to wait for some roles, and one of those roles is from La Boheme.
Yes.
Do you see yourself singing Mimi sometime in the near future, or is that a ways away yet?
In the near future, unfortunately not. As much as I would love to sing Mimi and also some other roles in the opera repertoire, I am very realistic with myself and understand my capabilities pretty well. So I do have to wait, but I hope at some point it will become something in my repertoire because it is an opera that just made me who I am now, inspired me to be who I am now.
Your debut recording, one might expect, would be filled with familiar opera arias, but it's not. It's a reflection of you and your family and perhaps what they've gone through to start a new life in this new country. Can you talk a little bit about the theme behind There's a Place for Us?
Absolutely. That is the theme of There's a Place for Us, is that I do come from this family of people who immigrated to the United States, not just my mother, who immigrated when she was 18 years old from Lisbon, Portugal, but my grandfather and my grandmother on my father's side immigrated from Puerto Rico and Italy. And if it hadn't been for my background, my family members who have supported me my whole life, especially this idea of becoming an entertainer, becoming an opera singer, I wouldn't be in the shoes that I am in now. I wouldn't have this kind of life. And I know that this story is not just one that belongs to me. It's also a story that belongs to millions of people in this country, as well as billions of people around the world who have had to immigrate to certain countries in order to have a life, in order to seek a life with promise and with opportunities. So I concocted this album for that reason, because especially now in our social climate at the moment, especially in this country, I feel that it's very important to use any kind of platforms we have, if it's in politics, if it's as an artist, if it's in anything, any kind of artistic responsibility, we should use it in a good way, in a positive way that hopefully can affect and impact people's lives, especially those who need it at the moment.
The title of this recording comes from the lyrics of the first song that opens the release, which happens to be from Leonard Bernstein, and we've been enjoying celebrating his centennial this year. Why was this the right piece of music to lead off your new recording?
Leonard Bernstein was a very special man. He wasn't just a genius composer, conductor, pianist. He was also a social and humanitarian activist, and he used a lot of his compositions to showcase his personal views on those social issues.
Take care of this house, keep it from harm, if bandits break it.
Greatly admire those kinds of artists who have used their reputation and their careers as ways of hopefully influencing other people and other social issues in a positive way, even though they are taking a risk, and that's what he did. He risked his career for his humanitarian views, and that's kind of what I want to do as an artist. In my generation, for my generation. And the words, the lyrics of the song just sort of encompass everything that I'm feeling about today's social issues. And I don't know, trying to send out a more positive message to the listener.
There are several songs on this recording that really blur the lines between opera, musical theater, art song, popular songs. One that you sing so beautifully is by Ricky Ian Gordon, and it's called Stars.
Stars over heart.
What about this beautiful lullaby resonates with you?
Ricky Ian Gordon is a composer I was introduced to when I was 18 years old because I listened to his Will There Really Be a Morning for the first time, actually at the Music Academy of the West, which is a program Marilyn Horne runs. I fell in love with this song. I thought, my God, who is that? Who wrote this song? And Ricky Ian Gordon was also someone I met in person very, very recently, actually, before I recorded the album last October. I went to his home here in New York and took Stars and Will There Really Be a Morning with me. We worked through both of them, kind of choosing, you know, which things to do for the recording and how to express things musically. And I just fell in love with him as well as already having fallen in love with him as a composer. I just fell in love with him as a person. Stars is a song kind of highlighting this idea of people of color, minorities, feeling a certain way, especially in this country. And that's what this album is about. It's about breaking down those barriers and breaking down those prejudiced views for the better of all people, not just people of color. And so singing this song, Stars, and being able to record it was really a pleasure and a gift from Ricky Ian Gordon, who I'm very, very happy and feel privileged to know.
It's so great when you get the opportunity to work directly with a composer. You know, so often I imagine musicians are just kind of guessing what the composer had intended. I mean, obviously there's a lot of information about pieces and what their intentions were, but still to get to work with him, what a thrill.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. Not only him, but I even got to meet Golijov. I went to his house in Cambridge at some point. He actually made lunch for me, and we were talking about his musical career and life and compositions. So these composers, living composers, I've gotten to work with personally and have real conversations with, not just about music, but also about their lives and what influenced them to create music in the first place. So it's pretty cool.
Tell me a little bit more about Osvaldo Golijov, because the piece on here, very gorgeous lyrics, but it seems to be a very sad song.
Yeah. Well, he's a very interesting man, Golijov. He's kind of a recluse, I would say, and he really keeps to himself. He talked to me a little bit about his life and the things that he's gone through, and he really is a true artist in all forms because he's been through a lot in his life. And I think when people have gone through so many different things, especially sad things, it brings out some of our most valuable and memorable artistic expressions, I think, that we have inside of ourselves. And so this song was created, I think, through all of those things he's been through in his life. And I wanted to sing it because of that, because it's so achingly beautiful.
We don't have time to talk about every single piece. I do want to ask you, though, is there one or two that you want to be sure that we talk about that we haven't touched on yet?
I would say the Melodia Sentimental by Villa-Lobos is one of the biggest songs for me, because it was a song that was introduced to me when I was very young. I was 13 years old. Vocal coach Kamal Khan, whom I've had a 16-year-long relationship with, he introduced it to me because of my mother. My mother is Portuguese. Villa-Lobos was Brazilian, but of course the language is Portuguese. And he knew that it would be a great fit for me because of my mother's heritage, her background, and her ability to teach me the language properly. And of course, the music is so beautiful and also kind of lost in the classical vocal repertoire. You don't really hear very many singers performing Latin music. And so I always wanted to bring out this kind of repertoire whenever I did recital work or concert work, to sort of dedicate it to my mother, to my heritage, and to also kind of reintroduce it to people if they've, you know, never even heard about it.
As you were putting this recording together, was there anything that you learned about yourself?
Yes. Oh my God, yes. I was going through a very interesting time, actually, when I was recording this album, not only career-wise, but also personally. So, for me, recording the album was very therapeutic because I was also coming from the States, where we've been having certain issues and certain negative messages. I find them to be very negative, being spewed out by certain individuals. And I wanted to release all of that into something good, into something peaceful. And when I was in the room recording it in London, I was looking out at all of the people in the orchestra, as well as Maestro Robert Spano, and the people in the engineer room, you know, listening. And I thought, look at all of these people from all around the globe in one room all together, performing all kinds of music from these different composers. And this is the kind of world I want to live in. You know, I want to live in this kind of community where no matter where you come from, if we join together as a unity, we can create something very powerful and very beautiful. I think human beings are very capable of doing that if they set their minds to it.
That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. You can sign up to win a copy of this recording by going to yourclassical.org. Special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julie Amacher.